Hey cousin, welcome to Coco Conjure. Here we talk about all things hoodoo, folklore, and spiritual journeys. If you haven't guessed already, my name is Coco. If you could be so kind, please leave me a like or a comment or subscribe. I promise you, I will entertain you and I will earn your viewership today. Okay, so it's a folklore episode, y'all. Hey, I love this time of the month. It's my favorite because I can just be a nerd and look through my books and, you know, sort through my tabbed stories and pick the ones I think would be the most fun to tell. Every month, of course, I pick a theme for our folklore, so I'm not just picking random stories all over. And this month, we're going to focus on devil tales. As I talked about in the second episode of this podcast, the devil in hoodoo is more than just the biblical Lucifer or Satan, right? You can't completely divorce it because whether you are Christian or not as a practicing hoodoo, there's a heavy influence of Christianity in hoodoo. So they can't be completely divorced, this idea of Satan and Lucifer and the devil in hoodoo. However, it's not exactly the same, right? Though not a creator, the devil is understood to be slick and have a great understanding of how creation works and also has the ability to manipulate the supernatural. So he didn't generate these forces, or he's not the source of power, but he has the ability to grant power to others, and he understands the powers of the universe that we do not understand. And perhaps what's most important about the devil in hoodoo is that he can be bargained with, right? Those of us not born with magic in our blood, or they have a high desire for a goal or a want, you know, you might find yourself shouting out the devil's name at the crossroad in an effort to bargain for spiritual power. And he's not always bad either. Instead, the hoodoo folkloric devil, the black folkloric devil, even with the presence of an Abrahamic God, lives in this moral gray area. He's willing to help the first woman gain the keys of success and get the upper hand over her abusive husband. But he's also willing to chase down and try to murder John the Conqueror because John ran off with his beloved daughter, right? So he's not bad or evil. He's just a spirit with tremendous power, right? And oftentimes works on his own behalf, not necessarily for someone else. So for this collection of tales this month, we're going to stick with our tried and true collectors like Zora Neale Hurston. And we're also going to hear from the newest author in our hoodoo library, Virginia Hamilton. But first, let's dive into a story collected from my home state of Maryland by Harry Hyatt. This one is under the header, Sell Yourself to the Devil. This lady had lived in the suburbs of Maryland between Ocean City and Berlin. She just lost her husband. She had a little four-room house, very, very poorly constructed. It didn't cost much, and she had one son. The boy was around like 15 years old. Directly after she lost her husband, a colored man came there and insisted that she take him in as a lodger. Well, of course, she told him no, that she had never taken a lodger, and more importantly, she had just lost her husband. She would rather not take this strange man in her house. But he insisted on staying there and forced himself into her house, and, you know, he stayed. Now, after he'd been there a couple days, she'd come in home one afternoon from her work, and there she discovered this man, this strange man in her house, had company. And on the second afternoon that this fella had been in her house, she and her son, they had come home and they both heard this laughing and carrying on and talking upstairs. Knowing there wasn't anyone but the one man there, they began to investigate, right? And the son went up the steps, and when he came back to his mother, he said, this man is up there and he has another heavyset black man sitting there with him. And he says, and they just having a big time, mama. They just having a big time. So the woman, right, she's a little curious, and she says to her son, well, boy, how did you see him? Through the crack in the door, mama, the son reported. And well, she was alarmed by this strange man being in her house anyhow, and this only alarmed her more. The next afternoon when she came in, her boy with her, you know, they heard this strange man in her house laughing and playing upstairs. And when the boy went to see who was up there again, he saw the man had a great big black snake on the bed, and he was playing with it, talking to it. Well, the woman had had enough at this point, and she asked the strange man to leave again, but he, child, he just laughed at her. So the next day, before she went back to work, the man had come down the steps, and he left the house. Seeing her opportunity, the woman, she fastened every window, locked every door, so this man couldn't get back inside her home. Well, when she came back that night from work, he was inside the house, right back upstairs in his room. So then she began to think, there was something really funny about this strange man. And he wanted to stay in this room. He didn't want to be seen in public. In fact, he told her that he didn't want to be seen in public too much while he was in town. Now, on the fifth day, then he finally decided it was time to leave. And he went to ask her. He said, so, ma'am, what do I owe you? And she said, well, anything you want to give me is all right. Child, she was just glad to get clear of him, she told him. Well, he says, I want you to tell me, how much do I owe you? And she says, no, I won't. Well, the man is getting a little upset, so he stands closer to her, and he says, now listen, you recently lost your husband, right? And she nods her head and agrees, yeah, that's right. And then he says, mm-hmm, and you owe the undertaker $200 for this burial and everything. Isn't that right? And she says, yes, that's right. And then he continues, he says, and you promised to pay the undertaker $25 a month until the funeral bill is paid off, right? Now she was a little flabbergasted. She wondered how he knew that. But she said, I did tell the undertaker I would give him $25 a month, yes. Well, he says, I'm going to give you enough money to pay that bill off. But I want you to do this, and listen carefully. You take this money and put it away, and you go up, and you just pay the $25 a month like you have been doing, and don't pay any more than that. Don't make any display with this money, because they know that you don't have it and you can't make it. They'll want to question you where you got it from. Now you make sure you act exactly as I instructed you. And he took her hand, and he counted out $25, $50, $75, $100. And he kept counting, and then gave her the $200. Then he said, while looking dead in her eye, making sure that money was clasped tight in her hand, you'll never see me again, I promise. And that night, he just packed up and disappeared. Now, the woman wasn't no fool. She believed that he was a man that had sold himself to the devil. And when a person do that, there isn't anything that they want that they can't accomplish. If they put their mind to it, they can do it. Mm-hmm. He sold himself to the devil. And when a person do that, if there's anything they want to accomplish, they can. Ooh, child. That's not something you hear all the time, right? A lot of times you hear stuff like, through God, you can accomplish anything. No, no, not in hoodoo folklore. They will say that, but they also go and tell you, if you want it bad enough, you sell yourself to the devil and there isn't anything you can't accomplish. So clearly the strange man was a hoodoo, right? And the snake and the big fat man he was carrying on with, well, okay, the big fat man may have actually been the devil himself. The snake may have been the devil too, drawing on some biblical imagery of, you know, Eve in the garden with the snake. But it also kind of reminds me of Marie Laveau and how the myth, the lore around her says that she had a snake familiar with her until the day she died, right? So maybe that snake was a little of both. I don't know. If this is your first time listening to a folklore episode, we always try to take a little piece of wisdom for every story. And so what's my takeaway from this story, I guess, is the question now, right? I guess don't stand in the way of a hoodoo. We may be a weird lot of people, but we never take more than we can afford to give back. That's for sure. All right, on to the next one. For this next one, let's check in with a man named Jack and his dealing with the devil in a story by Virginia Hamilton, aptly titled Jack and the Devil. One time, there was a wicked man named Jack. He treated his wife like a dog. He treated his children like dirt. He had a habit of drinking whiskey from morning till night. Now that whiskey stuff, that burned him up inside. And that was when the devil come to get him. Jack saw the devil standing there. He was scared to death and he moaned and he fell down. Jack begged the devil to just let him off this one time, just this time. Let him stay just a little longer on earth. But the devil said to him, Jack, I can't wait for you any longer. My wife Abby is expecting you. So the devil, he starts out for his home. And of course, Jack, he had to follow him. That is, until they came upon a drinking place. Mr. Devil, says Jack, do you want a drink? The devil says, well, I guess I do want one. But you see, Jack, I don't have the change. We never keep no change down there at my home place. Well, Mr. Devil, says Jack, tell you what I'll do for you. I got 10 cents in my pocket. If you'll change yourself into another 10 cents, we can get 2 drinks. Then you can just change yourself back to a devil again. Well, the devil thought that was fair. He changed himself into 10 cents. And Jack picked him up, but he didn't go to the drinking place, no sir. Jack put that 10 cents that was the devil in his pocketbook. Now the pocketbook was a large change purse with a cross, you know, a Jesus cross for its clasp. He shut that up real tight and the devil couldn't get out of it. Couldn't even get by the clasp in the shape of a cross. Well, the devil, right? The devil, he was begging and he was cussing and carrying on, but Jack paid him no mind. He went on toward home. Then the devil called to him and says, Jack, if you let me out, I'll let you stay free for a whole year. Let me go, please, Jack, because my wife, Abby, is too little to keep the fires high in my home place. All will go black and cold down there if I don't hurry to see her back in my home place. Well, Jack thought about it this way. He says to himself, I might let him go, because in a year, I could repent and get my faith in the church. I could get rid of him, you know, through religion. So Jack said, Mr. Devil, I'll let you out if you swear you won't come after me for 12 whole months. I promise, Jack, came the muffled voice of the devil from inside the pocketbook. So Jack undid the cross that was a clasp on his pocketbook, and the devil was gone. Jack never saw him go at all, but he knew he was gone. Now, I will repent, he says to himself. But I don't have to hurry. I got me 12 free months before the devil can take me. The last 3 of them months is plenty of time to get that good religion. Now, where's that 10 cents I had? Oh, yeah, here it is. I'm gonna give me a drink. After 6 long months were gone, Jack decided that the last month of the 12 months would be more than enough time to repent. So he had himself a drinking spree and then decided that the last 10 days of the last month of the 12 months would be just enough time to repent. And when the last week had come, Jack had drunk so much he was lying in bed for 7 days, staring at things that wasn't there. But the devil was there to collect. He was right there, for it was the last day of the last year that Jack had his freedom. And the devil had come for him for true. And poor Jack, ooh, child, poor Jack had to get up and follow the devil out of there. After a long time going, the devil and Jack, they pass a tree full of big, sweet apples. Oh, do you want some apples, Mr. Devil? Jack asked. Well, if you want some, you can go get some, the devil tells Jack. They both stopped to look up at the tree. How you expecting a man sick as me to climb a tree? Jack says. Here, you catch hold of that bow there, he told the devil, and I'll push you up on the fork in the tree, and you can get the apples. So the devil huffs, but he starts up, and Jack pushes him up until he's in the tree. Now, the devil is a man of taste, and he starts to touch and squeeze at the apples to find the best ones. Now, while the devil was busy with the apples, Jack whips his knife out and cuts a big cross right in the bark below where the devil is working. The devil hollers out, ah, 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 something almost hit me. What you doing down there, Jack? If you mess around, I'll cut your heart out. But the devil couldn't get out of the tree because there was a cross in the bark. Jack sat himself down right there by the tree and listened to the devil raging and cursing and cussing. So Jack kept the devil up there all that night and into the next morning. When the devil finally says to him, he says, Jack, let me down from here and I'll give you another year. You ain't giving me nothing, Jack told him, and he stretched out in the grass. Long after sunset, the devil says, Jack, cut that cross out from there so I can get down, and I'll give you 10 more years. No, sir, Mr. Devil, Jack says. I won't let you down until you swear you will leave me alone forever. Well, the devil found out that Jack was tough. He was hard and cold as ice. So he agreed to leave Jack alone forever. Jack cut the cross out of the apple tree, and the devil walked away without saying another word. After that, Jack never thought a minute about repenting or being good or getting that good religion. He wasn't afraid of the devil at all anymore. He lived a long, long time. But one dark day, his old body gave out, and he had to die. And he did die. He went to the gate of heaven asking to get in. The angels there, they just shook their heads at him. So then Jack went off to the gates of hell. And as he approached, he heard the devil screaming to his little imps, shut that gate as fast as you can. Don't let that man in here. He treated me worse than awful 2 times. Tell him to go back where he came from. And Jack calls to him. He says, but Mr. Devil, how will I find my way in the dark? Will you give me a lantern? Well, here then, the devil says. And he take a chunk of red hot burning coals out his fire. Take this with you, Jack, he says. And don't you ever, ever come back here no more. So Jack, he took the fire, but he got himself lost. They say he's still wandering in the dark. Some say you can see his little light a-bobbing this way and that way when the night is coldest and the chill is deepest. Man, Jack was so smart he was dumb. He knew that his soul was destined for hell, but he was committed to living like a fool. Sure, he bargained with the devil. He extended his life out, but it could be argued that he never really lived it if he got so drunk he was delirious. And when time inevitably caught up to him, because let me tell you something, time waits for no one. He tricked his way into some weird purgatory state. He was worse off than before. He'd have been better off just going to hell with the devil. But he was too sinful to go to heaven and too much of a menace for the gates of hell to open up to him. That story also details the will-o'-wisps. If you've ever been in like marshland, sometimes you look out and there's like these floating lights, you know. Some people think they're fairies. Some people say they're will-o'-wisps. A lot of folks, no matter their tradition, folk tradition, will tell you that their souls lost and wandering. Can't quite get into heaven and can't quite get into hell. If I had to take anything from this tale, it would be, well, it would be a few things. First, the one thing our bodies were not meant to do is live forever. It doesn't matter how much we stave off aging. It doesn't matter how good or bad our religion might be. Our body is not meant to be on this earth forever. You know, so what was it that Prince said? Prince said, you better live now before the Grim Reaper comes knocking on your door. And second, the second would be, don't be so committed to who you are now that you miss your opportunity to evolve into something better. Us hoodoos, we have the power to change our path. We have the wisdom and the knowledge of our ancestors, so we can kind of carve a path forward to make our life comfortable. But don't confuse being comfortable with stagnation. Okay? Just because you're comfortable doesn't mean you should stay there. Sometimes we have to grow as people, you know? Okay. Our final tale comes from Zora Neale Hurston's Every Tongue Gotta Confess, a collection of tales from her travels through the South. This one actually has a name that's not common for a Zora Neale Hurston story. This one's called The Woman Smarter Than the Devil. There was a young man, a very nice young man, raised nice, and he married a very nice girl, a lovely girl, and they loved one another dearly. And they lived so happily together that the devil didn't like it. So he put in to break them up. And every scheme the devil would do, their love would overcome. So the devil met a woman named Sarah one day, and she was barefooted. And the devil said to her, he said, what are you doing barefooted? And she said, well, I ain't able to buy no shoes. And the devil says to her, he says, I got a job for you. If you accomplish that job, I'll give you a pair of new shoes. And she says, all right. And the devil says, you know that nice man and his lovely wife? And she says, well, yes, I know them. And the devil says, I've been trying a long time to break them up, but every scheme I have don't take no effect and I give up. And the woman says, oh, I'll break them up if you give me them shoes. Yeah, I can do that. So Sarah went down to the house where the man and the lovely lady lived in a loving home. And she saw that the man was in the field plowing, and she saw that the man had a mole on his neck. So she went on further into the house, and she met the wife, and the wife, oh, she was bragging about her husband, just bragging. And Sarah agreed. She says, I mean, yes, he is handsome, but there's one thing I don't like on him, if you don't mind me saying, and that's the mole on his neck. If you cut that off, ooh, he would be perfect. So the wife asked, she said, well, how can I cut it off and he won't know it? And Sarah says, well, you just wait till he go to sleep and you take a razor and you cut it off. And the wife says, I mean, my husband is pretty now, but if anything will make him prettier, I'll do it. So after dinner, the man went on back down in the field and went out to plowing. So the woman left and she went on down to the field and she told him, you know, I found out something today. And he said, what? And Sarah said, she said, you and your wife, y'all been living together a nary year and you love her, don't you? And he said, yes. And Sarah said, and she make out that she love you too, you know. But tonight, when you go to bed, just make sure you stay awake and just cover up your head when you sleep. Because she going to take a razor to you and try to cut your throat. Now, don't say I didn't tell you. Don't call my name. But you'll see what I'm telling you is true. And then Sarah just wandered off, leaving the man to wonder. So that evening when he knocked off and supper was ready, he ate and he went to bed and he covered up. And just when his wife thought he was asleep, she went to easing the cover off and he looked up and he saw that she had a razor in her hand. And he says, woman, what are you doing with that razor? I done heard it today you was gonna cut my throat. Good as I've been to you, long as we've been living together, you gonna do this to me? And she says, the wife says, darling, I just want to cut that mole off your neck to make you more pretty. Oh no, you wasn't, you was trying to cut my throat. And he put her out the house. The next morning, Sarah went over to the devil's house and said, and the devil said, he said, Sarah, is that you? And she said, yeah, I done what I told you. I done broke them up. Can I have my shoes? And the devil just stares at her a second and says, all right, just wait a minute. And he goes down to the swamp and cuts a long pole and tied it onto those shoes. And he says, here's your shoes. But anybody slicker than me, I don't want them too close. So you get back. Don't let them lugs touch me. I don't want you too close. The devil knew he ain't want it. He was like, I don't want it. She too smart. Just like Jack, Sarah had a cunning and a wit to outsmart the devil. But unlike Jack, she knew that it was better for her to use her bargain for her personal betterment. So what can I take away from this story? If you're going hoodoo and you're going to meet the devil at the crossroads, make it worth your betterment. Be like Sarah. Don't be like Jack. All right. I am recording this on election night, so we got time for one question, because I'm not going to lie, I would like to just go watch a movie and rest my head afterward. I don't want to look at the TV too hard, Because my anxiety, I don't think my anxiety can take it. Last time around, we did this between Biden and Trump. I actually broke out in the hives on election night. And I don't want my anxiety to get that bad this time. So we're going to do one question. I'm going to go watch a nice, you know, Hallmark Christmas movie. I done saw they got a black couple on there now. I'm going to watch their little Christmas movie. And then I'm going to go rest my bones. So if you haven't been here before, this is the part of the episode where I take a question from the internets, the boards, and I read it and I do my best to answer it. Here's our question for today. Okay, it says, this one's from Facebook. It says, honestly, I've been wanting to combine my Baptist upbringing with my hoodoo roots. I want to go back to church and really be that churchy hoodoo I see myself being. My question is, how can I be a churchy hoodoo without being exiled from the church for my practice? I ain't trying to hear none of that witchcraft is the devil-ish when I go back. Are there any churchy hoodoos out there? Okay, so I am not a churchy hoodoo cousin, very sorry. But I do come from a family that it's assumed that everyone is Christian. Everyone goes to church. Everyone believes the same thing. It's just assumed. I said before, my grandmother and her like generation, so all that generation of aunties and uncles and older cousins, they believe Christianity is the truth, capital T. Water makes things wet. The sky is blue. Jesus died for your sins. Those are all facts in their life. Right. So when we go to gatherings, family reunion, for example, on Sunday, we all go to church. If we don't go to church, then one of the pastors or reverends or, you know, ordained in our family will speak or have church basically before the final supper on Sunday. So like it's just assumed. So the question I guess that you're asking is, how can you be that churchy hoodoo without being exiled from your church? That's a very simple thing. It's as simple as don't call it hoodoo. Shut up about it. Don't call it hoodoo. If you want to practice, you do your practice. And if other people are attracted to your spirituality and you do not call it hoodoo, they will probably call you a faith healer or a faithful person or touched by God, any of those things. But don't call it hoodoo, because first of all, they won't understand hoodoo. They will just think that you're saying voodoo, like the religion. And that's when you get into the witchcraft is the devil shit. You know, they're not, I don't know about you, but when I went with my grandmother to church, she burned frankincense. They burned frankincense in the church. You know, when I went with my great grandparents to her church before she passed, they had oil and they anointed your head. So all of the things that are incorporated from black church behavior is already in hoodoo. So you can just do both. And just say nothing. Say nothing. Just do it. You know, they don't need to know what you call the other half of your faith. And most times they have on a very Christian lens. And as long as your hoodoo is very steeped in Christianity, they will just assume that you are a faith healer, that you are touched by God, that your faith is strong. That's all they're going to assume. You go to church with your head wrapped, they think nothing. You wear white, all white. When you go to church and you're an usher, they think nothing, right? Or trying to think what else. You want to go up and be anointed by the pastor, they think nothing. Like, so they're not even gonna what I'm trying to say is, especially in Christian tradition, hoodoo is meant to be covert. It's meant to be under the radar. It's not meant to be overt and seen, right? It's a cult in that way, and that it's a mystery. It's the unseen mystery, right? So if you stick true to that, you'll have no problem. Just go be churchy, and when you come home, burn your sage. Or you wouldn't necessarily be burning sage. you would be putting frankincense on coal. You would be burning your, you know, your myrrh incense. You would be taking a hyssop bath. That's not anything that they would think is strange at all. Where, you know, if you come from a real Baptist family, they're reading Psalms and they're touching heads and they're doing all the same stuff that we're doing. So I wouldn't even worry about it. You ain't the devil. They're not going to see you as the devil. People normally get into trouble when you invite those churchy folks into your home and you have an altar set up that don't look like Jesus, don't look like God, don't look like church. That's normally when you get into trouble. But your ancestor altar could just be photos, you know, with a cross in the middle, the family Bible. They won't think anything of that, seriously. So if you want to be a churchy hoodoo, you shouldn't have an issue. But in general, as a hoodoo, as an occult practitioner of black folk magic, right? Your magic should not be that obvious to anyone looking at you who does not know that that's what you are. It shouldn't be. We're not like other ATRs where there may be a uniform of sorts, you know, fetishes or certain charms or certain talismans or certain wear that you have to wear. We don't have that, right? You should look like an everyday person, and your magic should fly right under the radar of most people. All right. We have reached the end of the podcast. Thank you so much, guys, for being here with me. I appreciate all of you. I'm on a steady creep on my YouTube channel to like almost 200. I can't believe that at all, especially since for season 2, I haven't advertised anywhere. I used to do it really heavy on Reddit, really heavy on Facebook, really heavy in Discord, and I just stopped. I don't know. A piece of me is I'm not very good at internet social media stuff because I don't want to get involved. Right. But if I'm not involved, how are people going to find me? That's why I always say, if you found me, you were supposed to find me at this point. You were guided to me, or I was put in your path, because I'm not very loud about this podcast, like at all. Okay. So thank you so much for being here. Before we go, cousin, I want to let you know that you deserve the world. Okay. No matter whether you are that churchy Baptist hoodoo or not, we get one chance on this earth as who you are right now. I don't know about reincarnation. I don't know about angels. I don't know about heaven. I don't know about hell. All I know is that you get one shot at who you are on this planet. So live your life fully. Embrace life. Do good things for yourself. Look out for each other. And if you call for your blessings, when you get into a touchy spot, I promise you that your blessings will come to you. I'll see you guys next time.